Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. So happy to have you with us today as we talk about painful things. Unfortunately, in some ways, but maybe good for you if you've been suffering a little bit. I know hip pain, for example, can be really difficult to diagnose. It's hard to treat. But there's some new research going on, so there's always things to help you make your life a little better. Larry Mueller, of course, here, and with our guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori, thanks for coming. Appreciate it very much.
Great to be here. Another beautiful Wisconsin day.
Yeah. Lori's a physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW Madison. And Jill, it's great to see you, too.
It's great to be here.
Well, I tell you what, you may have a hip problem, maybe you've got another kind of injury, and if you do, I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post a question on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Why is hip pain so hard to diagnose?
Because it masks itself as many other things. So, the number one is back pain.
Right.
So if you have pain in your hip, it could be a primary hip problem. It could be a piriformis problem in your buttocks. It could be a sciatic. It could be referred pain from your back. After seeing a number of people who come in complaining of hip or buttock pain, they've seen physicians, it's really hard to sort out. Many of these people will have pathology in their back, but you don't know if it's coming from their back, or you don't know if it's the primary pathology they may have in their hip. It's a really difficult area to diagnose. If you're an adolescent, you may have hip pain, and it gets passed off as just an overuse. You've been running around too much, or sometimes hip pain refers to the knee. So it's a really difficult joint to.
How do hip pain injuries happen, or it could be just a whole variety of things?
Well, I think like any other injury, it can be just a mishmash of anything. If you think about a lot of sports or activities we do, we're flexed at our hip. So we're kind of bent over, whether it's, Larry, you golfing, bent mm-hmm. over, bent forward a little over the ball, or a hockey skater, a runner, anything like that, our hip is in flexion. And then if you add a rotational component to that flexed position, you can actually cause some wear and tear to your labrum, which is kind of a lining within the hip, the socket part of the hip joint itself. And that's kind of what's kind of the hot thing, I guess, in orthopedics right now, is something called femoral acetabular impingement, which is this pinching sensation we get when we flex our knee or bring our knee towards our chest. And so labral tears we're finding them more often. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're occurring more often.
Well, actually, in some populations, they are. For example, in hockey players, they've done a tremendous amount of research in hockey players in junior and bantam, even though bantam sounds young, but they're still teenagers. And they found something like 80% of them have femoral acetabular impingement. And they may not be symptomatic, but when they do imaging of them and they do a clinical exam of them, almost all of them have this impingement because of the positions they're in when they play hockey.
And it's getting to be, the other population they're finding it a little more common in is single sport athletes. So people who choose a sport very early and aren't a multi-sport athlete, they're finding an association between choosing a sport too early, regardless of what sport it is, and an increase in femoral acetabular impingement.
Hmm.
And probably the same thing. It probably has to do with position, like you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ways that we can determine if what we see, kind of those things that show up on clinical exam and or imaging, is really the source of symptoms, is to do an MRI with contrast. It's called an MRA or MR arthrogram. And when they do it, when they inject it, they inject lidocaine into the joint as well. And so it helps with the diagnosis. If they do an MR arthrogram and people are like, I actually felt better, after I had that imaging done, it very well could be that that indeed is the pain generator, because they had an injection of lidocaine when they did the injection. So it's helpful to kind of monitor, and they usually have people monitor their symptoms the first 24, 48, 36, 72 hours to see if I felt so much better after I had that imaging done. And it wasn't the imaging that did it, but it was the fact that they got injected with lidocaine.
Yeah. There's some new research out there on this, on cartilage tears.
Yeah,
that,
you know,
relates to it.
Well, yeah, you know, the hip is the new knee,
right?
You know, sort of where we're at. You know, we've been studying knees for years and years and years, and meniscus tears, which is the cushion between your two bones. And, you know, originally when they were torn, they would take them out, and then they tried to repair them, and then sometimes now they just leave them in place. And then they started discovering these tears in the hip as well, and a lot of this came about when they developed arthroscopy at the hip, when you no longer had to open up the hip joint to do surgery. So they could put a scope in there and they could see these labral tears that were not unlike the meniscal tears. And so they started, you know, taking them out and fixing them. And again, we're advancing there and seeing that, that some of these should be left alone and they should be referred to physical therapy. So perhaps a cortisone injection followed with some physical therapy to work on mobility, strengthening, and so on through the hip and core. Actually controls their symptoms.
And I'm going to follow up with that because you said the core word.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually, in the athletic population, there is some, I find it fascinating, research coming out. And I know I'm kind of nerdy that way, but there's...
One of many.
There's an association between femoral acetabular impingement and sportsman hernias. We're not talking about classic hernias, but we're talking about something that we call athletic pubalgia, where there's actually kind of a tear of some of the musculature in the pubic region. So it's not your classic inguinal hernia. And there was a really fascinating study that came out of the University out of Minnesota by a physician, Chris Larson, who does fabulous research in this area. And what they found is many, many people who have femoral acetabular impingement actually have athletic pubalgia as well. And if you don't fix both, people don't get back. And so there's many people who, when they identify one or the other in their athlete, check to make sure that they don't have the other condition as well. Because what we're finding is, good golly, if I can't get that rotational motion from my hip because I have impingement in my hip, I'm doing a lot of torsion through my core, and they're actually causing some muscle tears there.
Well, and then to go back to the low back thing, they also found that people with hip impingement had decreased pelvic motion and front to back in the sagittal plane, we call it. So, you know, sort of a chicken and egg, but my guess is those people were stiff in their low back, and so they compensated at their hip, and then they tore their labrum in their hip because their low back didn't move like it was supposed to. So that's one of the things that a physical therapist would do if someone came in with these symptoms and they found this stiffness. They would work on mobility in their lumbar spine, and sometimes when they begin to move there, it decreases the stress on the hip.
So it lots really to talk about there. Yeah, lots to talk about there, and a whole range of great questions coming up from listeners. So let's turn to some calls. And Kathy in Wanakee has one that probably a lot of people are interested in. Hi, Kathy. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Last time your therapy experts were on, they recommended replacing mattresses way more frequently than my husband and I have. We are in our early 60s. Our mattress, the current mattress, is probably 20, 25 years old. Nothing hurts on me whatsoever. My husband has some lower back slash hip pain that he manages with stretching pretty effectively, but we have shopped for mattresses before, but are just clueless. We know two people who bought expensive Tempur-Pedic mattresses and hate them. Mm-hmm. And so we just can't decide. Any help?
Well, first of all, those are great questions. And first of all, does your husband, when his back and hip pain act up, is it in the morning? Do you feel you can associate his pain with mattresses?
What happened overnight?
I would say to some extent, yes. I mean, if nothing else, we'd like to try a new mattress and see if it helps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so there you go. That was the ticket right there. So the first number one thing is find a place that will let you try a mattress for 30 days.
Or even longer.
Some are 90 days.
Yeah, some are 90 days. So, and you have to be willing to send it back if it doesn't work. So
right, but then you have to buy another one from them instead, and I don't know if they let you keep trying them and trying them. It's not like you can go back and say, I'll keep our old mattress in case this doesn't work. I think that's correct.
Well, we'll ask them. I don't know, and maybe a mattress expert will call in. In fact, we were talking about mattresses one day, and somebody who worked selling mattresses called us up and told us that when you get a mattress, you're supposed to rotate it. Wasn't it every month, Larry?
Right.
Yeah, every month for like 6 months to break the mattress in. So, I don't know what to say. You know what you like. Is it a firm mattress with a pillow top that gives you some cushion but firm support, and, you know, one that allows you to, you can put a topper on it if you want to, if that works for one person or not the other. But, you know, something that's firm but gives you the right amount of cushion on top to conform to your body. But mostly finding something that you lay down it, you go, it feels good, and they let you return it if it's not working.
Yeah.
Right. And I appreciate what you said about a certain brand not working. I think that mattresses are kind of like wine, and that more expensive isn't always better.
Yeah.
I think it's you don't have to buy a top line, top quality. You can probably find something mid-range that works for you.
Yeah, you know, I bought new mattresses 3 years ago for everyone in our family, and everyone is happy with it. I didn't get anything really expensive. I kind of went through the medium, and these are on sale, and that seems okay.
Right. Did you flip them? Have you been flipping them?
Oh, well, no, because they're super heavy.
Right.
So I think I flipped it once. Anyway.
So there you have it.
So there you have
but
it.
Those are great questions.
Yeah.
But you can flip it. You could also turn.
Spin it.
Flip it. And the pillow tops, you can't flip.
You can't flip it.
So you just have to spin those.
Spin. Yeah. And if mine is square, so I just turn it a half a turn.
Perfect.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Each time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that works. But the whole thing, Kathy, is you've got to take that leap.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like buying running shoes, too. You always, the wine analogy, but I'll go with the running shoe analogy. You know, getting the $150 running shoes isn't necessarily a lot better than the 70 or 80 ones. It's got to be something that works for you.
Right.
And I can't tell you exactly what's going to work for you.
Just going to have to take that leap.
Yep. Right. Yeah.
Good luck. Thank you so much.
Yeah, let us know how you do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please do.
She'll become the mattress expert.
She'll become our mattress expert. Yep.
Norman in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi, Norman.
Good morning. I'd like to ask your panelists there if they have any good suggestions at what I might do for the fact that I'm getting progressive weakness over the last 3 or 4 years in my lower extremities, particularly between the knee and the ankle. And it's almost normal in the morning, and the longer I go during the day, the worse it gets. And by mid-afternoon, depending on what I've done, I can hardly walk because it both hurts a little bit, but it just feels that I don't have any strength there.
You're unsteady.
Huh.
I haven't fallen over yet.
No. Well,
we don't want you to fall. So have you seen your doctor for this?
I've seen numerous doctors.
And what do they say?
Well, the only thing they said was that I had spinal stenosis.
Oh, there you have it. Yep.
And as a matter of fact, MRIs and x-rays and stuff shows that I do not have spinal stenosis.
Oh, really?
I have some foraminal stenosis on my left side.
All right.
On the L5,
S1,
on the left side.
Yeah, well, that would be your calves. Yep.
So that's the only thing, and that's only on that side. The right side is perfectly normal. They showed me on the x-rays and on the MRIs.
Yeah. Well, you know, so here's one thing about x-rays and MRIs. They take those when you're laying down.
Right.
And the anatomy of your spine may not be the same horizontally as it is vertically. So when you stand up and you've been standing up for a while, as in it's now midday, you get progressive collapse of your spinal column. And while you may not have what looks like stenosis when you're lying on your back for an hour getting an MRI, when you've been standing throughout the day, your symptoms are classic for stenosis.
Right.
It's, you know, calf pain, weakness in your legs that's progressive as the day goes on. So, you know,
What do you do?
Well, we treat the stenosis, so we go back to core strengthening, and that is trying to optimize your posture and your strength through your hips and your low back so that you can take some of the load off your spine. So what we see through lots and lots of research is that people tend to take the path of least resistance. They position themselves, they posture themselves, and they move in such a way that minimizes their energy expenditure. And what we try to do is get them to engage some of their core muscles more so that their muscles are doing more of the work and they're not loading their spine. So they tend to move and stand in a way to put the pressure and the loading on the spine. We try to focus on teaching you how to move and posture yourself so that your muscles are doing more of the work so that you don't get this progressive symptoms. And then also we talk about energy saving mechanisms during the day, like how to plan your day so that you are rested and able to continue to be active throughout the day.
And this would probably be the ideal candidate to exercise in the pool.
Yep.
Because you're unloaded and you can get some good strengthening done in an upright posture without having those symptoms.
Right.
So it would definitely be worth, Norman, I understand he sounds like he's seen a lot of physicians, but it would definitely be worth his time to see a physical therapist and get on a well-designed rehab program.
Yep. That you could just do it at home and so on. Because we don't want you to fall.
No, absolutely not.
It's a bad deal.
That's bad.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at physical therapy issues today with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 2 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn checks in with local groups who are trying to end homelessness using the Housing First principle. Right now, we're taking a look at physical therapy issues with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum from the University of Wisconsin. Great to have them along. And we'll turn back to the phones for a minute and go to Vivian in Green Bay. Vivian, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. My introduction to physical therapy was hip replacement 3 years ago. But since then, I've had a need for it. My mother suffered from bowel and urinary incontinence. She died at 89. I could see myself going down that path. I talked to my doctor about physical therapy for this.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's something I didn't know anything about. I hadn't heard any of my friends talk about it, but I've had 3 appointments and learned how the natural reflexes can be controlled, and there are ways of exercises, especially, I think, for bowels that people don't even know about. So I thought that might be a topic for listeners. I haven't heard it before.
Well, you know, Vivian, it's interesting that your friends don't talk about it.
Right.
Well, not unusual, you know, who talks about incontinence?
Right. Well, let me share with you today. That's oversharing.
Well, they don't talk about therapy. Yeah. They talk about the problem. But
Right. And the culture solution is diapers, you know, which is no good. But that physical therapy, we have a large core of physical therapists at UW Health who treat specifically incontinence in both women and men.
Mm-hmm.
So pelvic floor physical therapists are people who specialize in this.
Yep.
And so it's a very successful treatment for many, many people, not just for incontinence, but also for pelvic pain, which is another thing that people don't often talk about over their Thanksgiving turkey.
Right, especially in postpartum women and, you know, women who want to get back to being active and exercising after they have kids, and they may have some incontinence with that, some pelvic floor weakness. And so,
and people who have had surgeries, abdominal surgeries.
Correct. Yep. So for hernias, things like that. Yep. Colon cancers, things like that. So it is it's a specialty practice within physical therapy, but there are many more people who specialize in it, especially in kind of more of the urban areas. So if you live in a rural area, you may have to go into a little bit larger city to find a physical therapist that specializes in pelvic floor dysfunction, but you can definitely find people.
And obviously there are people in Green Bay. Vivian,
absolutely.
Thanks for bringing
thank
that
you for
to
that. That was awesome.
Yeah, appreciate it very much.
Yep.
And I want to turn to some other callers. Pat in the Waupaca area up next. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I was diagnosed with adult onset tethered cord syndrome.
Wow.
And underwent surgery to correct it. I had surgery when I was 6 on my lower back, which resulted in scar tissue. I had symptoms that were left side weakness, pain became unmanageable. MRI discovered tethered cord. They went in, they did a pretty major surgery. 4 months ago, I had this done. And the recovery has been very long and painful. And my question is, I'm dealing with nerve pain.
Right.
And it's sciatic, foot cramps, lower back pain, buttocks. And what role is physical therapy in the recovery process? I've been through physical therapy, aquatherapy, and I can't get off of drugs to
move on. Control. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, what about that, and how long would something like that normally take?
Well, your first surgery was at age 6? Did I hear
I
that?
I had two surgeries.
Yeah.
To correct a tumor in my lower back in Duluth, Minnesota.
Okay. Well,
and then all the resulting scar tissue.
Yeah, resulted in tethered cord.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So this has been going on for a very long time. And, you know, the nerves take a very, very long time to recover. I'm not sure what the surgeons told you in terms of the ultimate prognosis. I mean, basically, they relieve the pressure and tension that has been on those nerves, but then it takes a very, very long time for those nerves to recover. And the ultimate endpoint, I think, is really unknown.
Right. And a lot of people say from your back to the innervation at the muscle, they regenerate at about a millimeter a day.
A day or a month?
Oh, I thought it was a day.
Okay.
Millimeter a day.
It's a long time.
It's a heck of a long time.
And Pat's talking about it in his lower leg. So you can imagine how long it's going to take.
It's only been 4 months.
Right.
Yeah,
so it's going to take a really long time, unfortunately. And the nerves are very confused right now. They don't know what to do.
Right.
They had pressure on them. Now they don't.
And so are we talking a year or 2 years?
Oh, yeah.
A good year to feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's going to be very gradual.
And you need to keep up then with the physical therapy?
Right. Typically, you do a home program and you check in with your physical therapist as your symptoms change. You know, some will resolve. They may change from one kind of symptom, maybe from pain to a burning to a tingling to a achy. That, you know, as the nerves recover, you're going to go through all kinds of different sensations.
Right.
And so the idea is for the physical therapist to just kind of keep you on track and heading the right direction to make sure that the stimulus and the loads on the nerve are appropriate, that you're not excessively irritating and annoying the nerve as it's recovering, that you're staying strong and things like that. So they sort of guide your recovery over the next year plus, but it'll take a while.
And it will change. The therapy should change.
The therapy changes. And the other thing is, if you feel like the medication they have you on is not working, if you're on gabapentin, for example, you need to change your medication. And it may be that it works for a while and then it stops working because how your nerves are behaving changes. Mm-hmm. And so you may need a change in your medication. But a neurologist tell me one time that gabapentin is hit or miss with people. Like some people respond very favorably and other people don't. And I had no idea.
Yeah. So, same with Lyrica.
Yeah. So if you're on a medication, you don't feel like it's working, it might be time to switch it up a little bit.
Switch it up.
Yeah.
Good luck.
So stay in close tabs with your physician as well.
Yeah. And you're probably on track of where you're supposed to be.
And thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We had an email from a listener to ask if hip arthritis pain can be treated with these new hip treatment ideas. Can hip cartilage be repaired to lessen pain physically without a hip replacement, like PT, massage therapy, chiropractic work, and so forth, mm-hmm. and is strengthening the key to improvement, or is it increasing the range of motion as well as strengthening?
So that's a great question. The first part is it depends. So if hip arthritis can be treated this way, it kind of depends upon the severity of the arthritis. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes if it's just a little bit of arthritis, they can be managed with some of the cartilage replacements, or they can do just a replacement of the femoral head mm-hmm. and not and replace a partial, not replace the whole joint itself. So it depends on what kind of stage the patient's arthritis is in. So you need to see a physician and have imaging done and kind of discuss all that.
Right. And, you know, what we know about arthritis in any joint, whether it's the spine or knees or shoulders or hips or whatever, is there's not a strong correlation between your x-rays mm-hmm. and your symptoms. Mm-hmm. So there are people who have really severe-looking arthritis in their joints but have relatively little pain or very manageable pain. And there are other people who have hip pain or arthritis that doesn't look as severe that have terrible pain. And it tends to fluctuate and come and go. But what we do know is that there are many people who can avoid surgery mm-hmm. by a well-managed physical therapy program.
Right.
Because as the emailer has suggested, strengthening and increasing range of motion are both really important. A, the strengthening, you say, well, you know, you can't change arthritis with physical therapy. Yes or no, we could get into a lot of details about that, but we won't. But what we do know is that changing how you move and strengthening the muscles around your joint offloads your joint. So people tend to move in a way that puts a lot of load across their joints. Sometimes that's why their joints wear out. So we work on strengthening so that the muscles carry the load rather than the joint itself. And we also work on increasing the range of motion in that joint and around the other joint so that the loads can be distributed over a larger area and not focally on that arthritic portion of that joint.
Mm, there we go. Great question. Thank you so much. Let's go to Kate in Mazamani next. Kate, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question about cartilage in the ankle. I'm a very active person, trail running kind of my love, but 6 months ago I fell while climbing and I inverted, while I suffered a kind of a compression and shearing injury to my ankle, I inverted my ankle and I've had ongoing pain since and finally had an MRI a couple weeks ago. And I have a 5-millimeter osteochondral lesion
in your Taylor dome. Yep. Yes, you do.
And you know, I'm able to trail run mm-hmm. with minimal pain, but you know, I feel the weakness, and I feel something's not quite right. And mm-hmm. I've kind of heard mixed reviews about how stable this injury is, and if you can even do anything with physical therapy to help. You know, and improve my outlook. I would mm-hmm. hate to have surgery because I am so active.
Right.
But.
Sure.
Well, I think it kind of goes back into the exact same conversation we just had about the woman with hip arthritis, is that you want to make sure that the load is being distributed evenly over your talus. So the ankle joint is a very tight, congruent joint. So mm-hmm. you want to make sure that when you are trail running, you're actually kind of maximizing the range of motion that you go through, and you're not constantly loading, you know, right where your lesion is, per se. So mm-hmm. that would be really important. And then getting back to the strengthening and making sure that you're strong all the way up through your core sure. would be really good as well. And then the other thing I know you're going to say is trail running might be hard because it's an uneven surface.
Right. And is the lesion stable? Do you know if the lesion is stable?
That was not at all nothing was said in the MRI findings and impression about it being stable. There is no fracture.
Okay.
It just listed, you know,
are you getting symptoms? Are you getting clicking? Are you getting catching? Are you getting locking?
No clicking, catching, or locking. I can still feel just a little bit of stiffness, and sometimes I can force a click. Mm-hmm. But I can do that in my other ankle as well.
Okay.
I'm focused a little bit more on the
injured
one.
Right. Yeah. And what are the physicians saying? Are they wanting to do surgery?
Well, so My primary has said, you know, as far as she knows, it is a stable injury and continue doing what I can do. And I've been referred to an ortho, but I haven't went because I'm trying to sort of tease through.
I would,
who
you know what,
would
go, I would go
no,
to
no,
the
no.
ortho.
Go to the ortho.
Because that doesn't mean you're having surgery.
Yeah.
I would get a baseline feel for where you are because then if symptoms change or progress, then they have a baseline. So I would go to the ortho, go see the orthopedic surgeon and let them know where you are functionally, what you're doing. And it'll probably be a let's sit on this and watch and see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, a good ortho will take your perspective into consideration in making the decision. But you want as much information as you can. You're a very active young person. You have a lot of years to live with this ankle. So you want the best advice you can get. I would go to the ortho.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Is there any possibility that you could recommend anyone foot and ankle ortho?
I can.
Or can you email me?
I can. Can I do it on the air?
No.
Okay. So
ask Larry.
Well, you could.
Can you do it on the air? Okay.
You could? Okay. Katie Williams is at UW Health. She's a foot and ankle surgeon. I would recommend her. I would recommend seeing Jeff Baer, who's also in the UW system, who specializes in articular cartilage. He doesn't specialize in the ankle, but he does specialize in articular cartilage. So I would say Katie Williams is the foot and ankle surgeon at UW Health that I would recommend.
And there's a, how would you go about recommending for other parts of the state? Let's say, are there...
That's a great question. I usually call up the ortho docs I know here and ask them who they recommend. So that's if people call me and that's what I ask. But you can certainly look on the internet of the practice or the city in which you're looking at and see who kind of are the foot and ankle specialists, things like that.
And would they say foot and ankle specialists?
Yes,
or how would,
they usually
that's what it usually is?
Yeah.
Okay, so you want somebody specializing definitely in that.
Yeah, and Kate, if you don't have insurance, it lets you go to UW Health. Leave your email with
Jill?
With Jill Nadeau, mm-hmm. Because there's a couple other people in town, Kurt Rongstad and Pat Schirpella, who also do foot and ankle too. So there's four or five good people here in the Madison area, depending on what your insurance is.
So we'll put you on hold, Kate, and thanks very much for calling. Appreciate
Absolutely.
Your call.
Yep.
And let's turn to Roger in Arlington next. Roger, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Let me get you off speaker. Did I lose you?
No,
no
we're here.
You're him.
Give me a chance. I'll probably lose it.
Okay. Don't you have a teenager there who can help?
I've got a whole bunch of issues. I'm geriatric. I'm really old, about ready to circle the drain, but... I went to a quackapractor, and he was described as a miracle worker by a lady that I sent to him for a lower back. It really helped her. I have been seeing him for a lower back, and he's really helped me. But one day he said, "How's your neck?" And he grabbed my head and cracked it. And since then, I've got a nerve impingement in my lower back, and I can't really blame him for doing it. But I don't know. You know, anyway... After this weekend of deer hunting and that wind Saturday, turning ahead left and right, I really fired it off. Mm-hmm. I had trouble, as tired as I was, getting to sleep last night. When I turn my head a certain way, I'll get like a buzzing feeling, like I got a battery connected to my nerves. And it's, very disconcerting. And I was sitting here in the truck, turning my head to the left. It really, really bothers me. Where do I start? What do I do?
When you turn to your left, does it bother you in your left arm or your right arm?
The left shoulder area.
Okay.
It goes down
right.
The arm to the fingertips. Okay. Like
Okay. So I don't know how old is that circling the drain, but as we age...
72.
Oh, that's young.
Oh, yeah.
That's young.
Yeah.
Lori always says age... old is your age plus 10 years. but as we age, we do get what we call osteophytes or little bony formation that sit very, very close to the canal where our nerve roots come out. And my best guess is somehow you have an osteophyte that's sitting there pinching the nerve. And as you rotate, that little extra bone per se is probably pushing right on the nerve root.
Yeah. And it probably got stirred up when you got manipulated. That it was too much force in that area, and you know that osteophyte has probably been there a long
right.
time. If that's the case, but what it did is it inflamed the joint in the area, mm-hmm. and now that joint is putting pressure on the nerve. So one of the things you need to stop doing is turning to the left, because every time you turn your head to the left, you're kind of going and annoying that thing. So
that was really good.
Was it good? Thanks. I go in and see a physical therapist for a couple of visits, and they can give you some home things to do. Some traction sounds mm-hmm. good. They can give you show you how to set yourself up for a home traction with just some stuff you can make at home. A little bit of stretching and things to gap in there. They might do a little manual therapy to open that space up and make sure that there's enough motion in the joints above and below that segment so that you're not constantly loading that joint, and just give you a few things to do to help you recover from this.
Right. But mm-hmm. but sitting, especially in a tree stand, loaded all day, and
that cold wind.
You're on. You cut me out. Hello?
Hello.
Yeah. Well, that sounds good, but if I hadn't been able to turn even with the I wouldn't have got my buck Sunday morning.
Well, now you can sit home. You can go to some therapy and take care of this. You got your buck.
There you go.
There you All go. Right? Good luck.
Yeah.
Roger, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, man. Let's go to Tim in Eau Claire next. Hi, Tim. Thanks for calling.
Hello, I'm 31 years old. I've been having a problem since I was 17 or 18. And every time I go up and down stairs, if I have to do it a lot, the muscles for like the 4 inches on the front side of my legs above my knee ache for about 2 days. And that's a bit of an issue because I'm a satellite installer. So,
that's a problem.
Up and down ladders, all of that. And you would think that going up and down stairs and that muscle ache that I have for a couple days would eventually start to strengthen that area, but it doesn't seem to be doing anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Does it bother you when you sit for long periods of time? Like when you sit, is it stiff when you get up?
No, not in particular.
Okay.
It's those muscles, they seem to be the ones that when I'm going upstairs, that all the force is being put on those sets of muscles, and there's... I've tried modifying the way I go upstairs, but there's only so many ways you can go upstairs.
Right. And can you put your finger on a spot that hurts?
That entire area hurts.
Okay, and that entire. So how far, if you go from the top of your kneecap, how many inches above that does it bother you?
From the top of my kneecap, it's about an inch or two before it starts hurting, and then it's for about 3 or 4 inches from there.
Huh.
So it's muscle. That's it's not quad tendon.
It's your articularis genu.
Right.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Were you going to say?
I was thinking it was quadriceps tendonitis, but it's not if there's that gap.
If it's that high.
Right.
Yeah.
There's the articularis genu.
Well, it might be a little bit less, but I also I also have very, very short legs for my stature.
Okay.
Huh. Well, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah. What I'd say is get in and see a physical therapist. You could have what Jill referred to as quadriceps tendonitis. And that's, you know, you hear about jumper's knee and patellar tendonitis. That is an inflammation of the quadriceps tendon, for better or for worse, as it goes from your kneecap down to where it attaches on your shin bone, on your tibia. Quadriceps tendonitis is where the tendon above your kneecap attaches from your kneecap or from the end of the muscle in your thigh down to your kneecap. So it's sort of that gap between the end of the muscle itself and the tendon. There's also some bursas there, too, and you have a little muscle called the articularis genu that helps retract some of the bursa and the other soft tissue when your kneecap moves. So yeah, you have some kind of process going on there. And I go in and I would see a PT and have them take a look at it. Look at your mechanics. It could be, you know, related to alignment. It could be related to flexibility. It could be related to any of a number of issues. Did you have any injuries when you were in high school, you know, before 17, 18 that might have?
I've complained of my knees hurting basically since I was 9 or 10. And really nobody ever said anything was wrong. One thing that I did change that seemed to help, now it only really hurts after a day of going up and down stairs, but for the longest time, I kind of walked a bit like a duck with the my the points of my feet pointing outward instead of straight.
Yep.
And changing that got rid of it from hurting every day. Now it just hurts when I do a lot of stairs.
Huh. Okay. So, yeah, I would go in and see somebody because it does sound mechanical.
And alignment.
Yeah, and alignment just from that issue. So so perhaps a few exercises and a biomechanical analysis would head you in the right direction. Problems with any other joints?
No, not really.
Okay. All right.
And it may be that an orthotic or some sort of adjustment in his foot and how he lows your feet may be a difference too, because if it doesn't bother him when he's sitting and things like that, you can kind of rule those things out.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So do
that.
And let us know, Tim. Seriously, I'm really curious about this one. Okay.
Thank you, Tim. Thanks very much for calling. Taking a look at physical therapy issues today with Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tune in to the Ideas Network on Thanksgiving Day for some holiday specials at 10, America's Test Kitchen Talks Turkey. Then at 11, The Splendid Table's Live Turkey Confidential helps you make turkey. And later at 1, you can relax with the best of the best Third Coast Audio Festival winners. That's our Thanksgiving Day holiday lineup, Thursday starting at 10 on the Ideas Network. Right now, taking a look at your aches and pains today with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. And we had a question on Facebook about trigger finger. Tamara on Facebook would like help for trigger finger. And Jill, what?
Yeah, so trigger finger is it's where you have a little nodule on your flexor tendons on the palm side of your hand. And what happens is it has difficulty sliding under what you call your A1 pulley, which is just a fancy way of saying right where your finger attaches to your palm, it has difficulty sliding through there. And so what happens is you bend and it gets stuck and you have to force the finger straight. And it is very, very painful. So you can get an injection in this, a cortisone injection. Apparently it works about, it's a 50-50 shot. Get, no pun intended, a 50-50 shot.
Oh, okay. Nice job on that.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. So about 50% of the time, people will feel better with that. And then my understanding is if that is not successful, surgery is an option. And apparently the recovery is pretty minimal, is my understanding. So I'm not aware if there's any splints that help with it. I know a lot of people end up with it happening in the middle of the night. So they flex in the middle of the night and they get stuck there. And then when they try and go the other way, it's incredibly painful.
No.
It's more common in women than men, especially postmenopausal women. So I'm not sure if that fits Tamara, but that's kind of the age group and more common in your ring finger.
Than anywhere else.
Yep. Cool.
Barney in Burlington, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hi. Thank you very much for allowing me to give my couple miracles that I've experienced.
Okay.
Something like 20 years ago, I had my right knee had a problem with the meniscus missing, according to the x-rays, and made a lot of noises and pains. And someone mentioned trying this glucosamine, chondroitin.
Mm-hmm.
So after a month or so, it cleared out. And a month after that, I started walking 25 miles around Lake Geneva.
Oh, nice.
Good
before
for
that,
you.
I couldn't walk 25 feet.
That's awesome. Good for you.
And the second miracle, if I could pass that to, was so for the last 5 to 6 years, I've been to various doctors and x-rays and even CTs. For my the other knee was very painful and swollen up probably an inch more than the right knee, the left knee. And so one of my granddaughters happened to mention that she's a nutritionist for a high school lunch program. She says something about turmeric capsules may help. So why not? So after many doctor visits and x-rays and all that stuff for 5 to 8 years, I tried the turmeric, and less than a week, the 500 milligram capsules, the swelling went down completely, and the pain and everything left my knee. Now I got a problem how to walk without a limp. Kind of stuck in the other category.
Oh.
You know, that's awesome. And, you know, I love that story for so many reasons. The first being what we said to earlier in the show, that just because you have terrible-looking x-rays and CAT scans and MRIs doesn't mean you're destined for a joint replacement. You know, Barney used some supplements, glucosamine chondroitin and some turmeric, and those work for many people to help with that. So, and you will always go through, you know, exacerbations and remissions. You're going to have times when it's a little worse. Sometimes it's related to the weather. Sometimes it's related to your activity. Sometimes it's related to, you know, a little spill or a twist that you took and you stirred the pot a little bit. But then you get back in your routine. You take your supplements. You give it a little bit of time and it calms down again. But many people do well with this. And then if you saw a physical therapist for a couple visits, Barney, they might be able to give you some exercises to help with your limp.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And get you a little stronger so you can keep walking around Lake Geneva.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Somebody told me you have to be a little careful about selection of those products.
They're not FDA regulated. Yep. That is correct. So you really need to read the labels. And you also, it's very helpful to consult with your pharmacist or your physician and make sure that it doesn't negate any of the medications that you're on. So we don't really want anybody to go out and start trying these things without checking and making sure it's okay based on your current meds.
Exactly. And then there's a fair amount of literature that suggests it takes, at least for the glucosamine chondroitin, it takes 2 to 3 months to know whether or not it really does anything. So you can't take it for a week and say, oh, nope, it's not working.
Right. No. And I believe that the glucosamine needs to be taken in conjunction with the chondroitin. So you need the supplements that combine it.
Yeah.
And the... I'm told that there's more sold than there actually is made, are supposedly sold than there is actually made.
Really?
So you need to be careful.
Right. Read the labels.
I would consult with, you know, if you're at the pharmacy, talk to the
pharmacy. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks again, Barney, for calling.
Awesome.
Appreciate
thanks,
it.
Barney.
Elizabeth in Poinette, thank you for calling. Hi.
Yes. Good morning. I guess in summary, I have a question regarding, is it ever the case that your patella can be so worn that you can't have a knee replacement? I had heard that at some point, so I just wanted to know if that was true. I've got about a 40-year history of starting as a teenager a right patella that subluxed, and I did have surgery to keep it in place in my 30s. And don't really have pain or anything, but I think I still have some laxity in that joint, and it looks that knee is visibly more swollen and and so on than the opposite knee. So,
When they do a knee replacement, they replace the underside of your patella as well. So they kind of put a little button on there, for lack of better terms.
Okay.
And so I would think that even with some substantial wear and tear, they'd be able to do that.
That
wouldn't be a factor.
I've not heard that it can get so bad that you can't do a knee replacement. I've heard that it gets so bad you can't do
other
kinds
of surgery. In my future at some point. Right now it's not painful. I've had some physical therapy for strengthening and so on. But
good. Keep doing that.
Yep.
It was great. It was very helpful. I did a real extensive course of it about 3 years ago and probably should go back again. Life gets in the way and I'm having trouble finding time to do it, but I think that might be something worth considering again.
Well, let's see. You don't have time for PT, but you have time for a knee replacement? Sorry, I just had to throw that one out there. but that's classic of what we see is you start to feel better and you stop doing the therapy and then things kind of slide the other way and eventually you get to a tipping point and then you end up back with us. So, A, get back on it and try to find a way to make it work for you to stick with it. And then also, if it doesn't seem like it's working, you're absolutely right. It might be time to go in for a tune-up and things may have changed a little bit and you may need something different.
Right, exactly.
Good luck. But thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call, Elizabeth. Amanda in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Amanda.
Hi. I have a question about something that came up in my first PT visit a week ago. I was going in because I had problems with both legs, but particularly something that's developed with my right leg where I've got a real problem with my range of motion. And the odd, what I thought was odd thing that the therapist brought up was she said that the very, very end of my tailbone might have been a little bit out of line and that she could pull it back into line. with internally by with a gloved finger in the anus.
Mm-hmm.
And this just sounded to me like it came out of left field. I'd never heard anything about that before. I didn't know if by, you know, she didn't have a picture of my tailbone to look at. She was doing this, you know, from an external diagnosis of whatever it looked like. And I don't know if my tailbone has always been that way or if something knocked it out of line. I'd just like to hear some pros and cons about the idea of manipulating a tailbone if, in fact, your problem doesn't seem to be like a painful tailbone or something like that.
Right. Okay. So the very bottom end of your spinal column is called your coccyx. It's a very small little bone, and it can be mobilized or evaluated externally. And then if people feel it's bent forward, you can actually mobilize or manipulate it internally, which is something that I personally am not trained in, nor Lori. I guess my first inkling would be to treat other things that are a little bit more local to your leg. Treat the impairments that are, you know, closer to the hip or the leg. And then if that indeed isn't turning the corner, then I may consider a manipulation of my coccyx. But if you don't report a history of a trauma and you don't have coccygeal pain that is correlated with your leg pain, I guess it wouldn't be my first line of defense.
Right. And I guess I would ask the physical therapist what the relationship is between the symptoms you're having and your coccyx. As in all things in life, it could just be a non-contributory finding.
Right.
Just like you could look at your spine and say, oh, right, you're a little stuck here, or you're a little rotated here, or you're a little this or that.
Incidental.
But it isn't really incidental. Thank you.
Incidental.
That's why I bring her along.
That's the only reason. That and I'm hosting Thanksgiving.
Right. So it could be an incidental finding that really doesn't need to be treated.
Correct.
So I agree with Jill. I wouldn't go there first. I would start with the most obvious things. And if you're not, if the physical therapist insists on it and you're not comfortable with that, I would
see somebody else.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Oh, no, I told her immediately that I'd like to do some research on it, and she did not ask me about it again on our second visit, and
okay.
I was just prepared to tell her that I would keep that option open, but that I wasn't ready to do that.
I think
Bingo.
That's reasonable.
Yep.
That's a very appropriate response.
Yep.
Okay,
all right.
Thanks
all right,
for your
you betcha.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Wow, lots of things going on today here on the Ideas Network and the physical therapy area. We're visiting with Lori Tyne-Brody. Lori is a physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW's Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Always great to have them along. You can join in too, by the way, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Back with our guests right after this look at the news. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, taking a look at, kind of the world of hurt, I guess, a little bit. Physical therapy issues, maybe you've got some aches and pains. Hip and joint pain is something we've dealt with a little bit today, but there's all kinds of things we can talk about with our two guests, Lori Tyne-Brody, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum. And every one of our lines is filled. Let me give you the number. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us, the email address, talk@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page, titled The Larry Mueller Show. That's the place to go. Ellen in Waupun has been waiting a bit. Ellen, thank you for waiting. Hi, what's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call. I have some bumps on my knuckles, a couple of my fingers, and I have had these for a couple of years, and I don't really have pain from them, but I'm beginning to notice a lack of flexibility at those knuckles. And I know that there's fluid in those bumps because one time one was pressed on and fluid came out, but it has returned. What can I expect from this in my future?
That's a good question. That's a good question. And those bumps, are they on kind of the back of your hand, that part of your knuckles? Is that what you're talking about, Ellen?
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Those are called either Heberden's nodes or Bouchard's nodes. So really fancy way of saying...
You have bumps on your fingers.
You have bumps on your fingers, and it's probably a little arthritic. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it kind of entails. And so kind of as we age, some people get them. I have a couple of them myself. And you're right, they can limit your range of motion. So you manage it the same way you manage any arthritis.
Mm-hmm. So, you know... activity modification, making sure that, you know, prior to Thanksgiving, you space out your cooking and chopping and cutting and things like that and give your hands some rest in between. Maybe putting something cool on them when you're done, you know, ice pack or a cold wash rag with some frozen peas on top of it to cool them down a little bit after you've used them. Sometimes people will put some splints on to rest them at various times during the day. So really, the bumps themselves are not an issue. It's just a matter of managing the arthritis that causes the bumps.
Hmm. There we go.
What I'm wondering is, you know, because when that fluid came out, and this was about 6 months ago, it felt better for a while.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now the fluid is built up again.
Right.
There's no recommendation to have that fluid drained off periodically.
Because it comes back again.
Because it keeps coming back and there's a risk of infection. That's
right.
The problem is you don't end up with an infection there, so we don't want to go
make
in
it worse.
Right. And the bumps in the fluid are an excess synovial fluid, and that's a sign that joint has been overworked. That's the joint's reaction to being loaded more than it can tolerate. So it swells, just like your knee, an arthritic knee might swell if you walk too much. So the same thing is true of your hands. So that's
funny because they came on after I retired. So maybe I worked harder after I retired.
Well, you worked harder, or it may, you know, sometimes it's that depending upon what you're doing in your work, that you're loading your joints just right, you know, optimally in ways that are good for your articular cartilage. And then when you had that change in activity, your joints didn't like it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, thank you for the information.
Sure, thanks a lot for calling. I'm just looking at my fingers, and I have one bump on my little finger on my left hand.
Yep. And it just, it's like Lori said, it's no different than any other joint where you have synovial fluid in a capsule, but here it's just very easy to see.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. Thanks again, Ellen. Appreciate it. Tim in Heartland, on to you now. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I was trying to get some information today to help me out. I'm a 68-year-old man. I had an osteotomy done on my right knee about 15, 16 years ago. I know they don't do that surgery anymore. And I had a total knee replacement done on my left knee. And I work out every day for about an hour. I do weightlifting for about a half an hour, and I do cardio for another half an hour. And I've been starting to notice that I'm getting what I would call the old day shin splint.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what I could do to alleviate that problem.
Well, tell me what you do for your cardio when you do your
thing. I do treadmill, bikes, all those kind of things just to get my heart rate up. And I do it religiously about 6 days a week.
Good for you. Mm-hmm. Do you notice your shin splints or your shin pain is different on days you're on the treadmill versus days you're on the bike?
Not too much.
Okay.
And have you had this before, or this is just a new finding?
No, I would say it's been around for about the last 3 months or so.
Okay, and anything changed 3 months ago?
No, uh-uh.
Okay.
Do you need new shoes?
I was going to say, shoes worn out?
Well, I have new shoes, and I'm very careful about that. I also have orthotics that I have in my shoe.
All right. Mm. So have you seen anybody for this?
No, I have not.
Yeah.
It's probably worth it just because you're talking about all these muscles that are right below the joint where you had two major surgeries. So you had an osteotomy, which you're right, they don't do anymore, and then a total knee replacement. So, you know, the muscles that – many of those muscles that are down in your shin area also cross your knee joint.
I see.
So it may be – I love that you're doing strength training, and I love that you're doing cardio, but we may need to throw in a few specific exercises to really isolate those lower extremity muscles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is six times a week too much?
Well, are you mixing up your strength training? In other words, you're not doing the same routine 6 days a week?
No. I do change it, yes.
Okay. Yeah. So if you're doing a muscle group like every other day, it's probably appropriate.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to do that every day.
So how do you feel on the day that you don't exercise, day seven?
I tend to do a bike ride. There's a bike trail where I live.
Yeah.
And
busted.
I do about a 15-mile bike ride.
Okay. So your day off is just your day off from the gym.
A day off from the gym, yeah. Yeah, I'd see somebody because activity is really important to you.
Obviously.
Yes, and, you had enough stuff going on. You want someone to look at it mechanically and just see if you need to tweak something a little bit to keep you in your game. But 3 months, if it was going to go away by itself, it would have gone away by now.
Right.
And definitely take your shoes. When you go to see your therapist, take your old shoes so they can see your wear pattern. Take your new shoes. Take your orthotics. It may mean that you need new orthotics. So take all that stuff with you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks so very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. On he mentioned weight training. I was reading just somewhere where using light weights as opposed to heavier weights can be just as beneficial, if not more.
Hmm. The question is for what?
Right.
Yeah,
is it for more
strength.
Endurance or for strength or, yeah.
For strength.
Interesting.
Yeah. I myself am an advocate of heavier weightlifting, particularly as we get older. It doesn't mean you should walk into the gym if you haven't been to the gym in 20 years and start lifting heavy, but the conventional wisdom that older people shouldn't lift heavy has been refuted.
Right.
As long as you take into consideration medical history and joint status and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Yeah.
There we go. Julie in Green Bay up next. Hi, Julie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This is a great program.
Thank you.
So I'm 59 years old. Last year I had both knees, total knee replacements, 8 weeks apart.
Ugh.
I'm doing very well. I'm not complaining. Doctor says I'm doing better than most, but I still have pain on the outsides of both of my knees when I walk downstairs, a little bit up, but worse down. And it feels like it's not the middle of the joint or anything. It feels like it's soft tissue or muscle or something on the sides. And then my other question is about getting super, super stiff after I sit for any length of time, like 20 or 30 minutes, even in a restaurant. Worse yet, driving, if I have a long distance to drive. I don't really stop every 20 minutes and move around.
Right.
Just wondering if you can suggest anything to help me be less stiff and to figure out if there's something I need to work on or stretch on the outsides of the knees.
So do you still notice any swelling in your knees, Julie? Do you feel like they're swollen?
No, I don't think so. I'm not a thin person, so it's a little hard to tell, but I think my knees look more well-defined now than they did before the surgery.
Okay.
Okay, and are you working on hip strengthening and things like that? Because a lot of the muscles on the outside of your knee cross your hip.
Mm-hmm. Little mini squats they had me doing.
Yeah.
I still do those. I don't really count them. I do them when I think of it throughout the day.
Sure. What about isolated hip things like resistive bands to the side or the back or bridges or planks or anything like that?
I haven't been doing those lately, no.
Yeah.
Maybe that's
those might be nice things to add. So a couple of the muscles that cross at your knee, kind of particularly where you're talking on the outsides of your knee, originate up by your hip joint. And what we know is that a lot of knee pain comes from a lack of stability at the hip. And so working in the frontal plane, in other words, not the normal plane we walk, but a plane we would sidestep, really strengthens those muscles. And I think that's what Lori's alluding to.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm going. And then the next question is, are you using your hips appropriately? Are you walking normally? Are you using your hip muscles to get in and out of a chair, to lift yourself up the stairs and things like that? Because, there's a squat and then there's a squat. So, we've done enough electromyography where we put little electrodes on your muscles and watched a bunch of people do specific activities, and not everyone fires their muscles the same way. So having a physical therapist therapist again, look at you again and see how you're moving and using your muscles might provide a clue as to whether or not you're moving correctly. So, for example, I saw a patient last week who was doing a clam, which is a side-lying exercise. She had been doing it forever and ever, so I had her get on and look at it. And she was lined up pretty well, and she lifted her leg. And so I took her and I tilted her pelvis probably an inch one direction to completely change the exercise for her. So she didn't realize that she wasn't engaging the muscles she was supposed to. So there are some subtleties and stuff around the hip, kind of like we talked about at the top of the show. Then the second piece of that is if you have arthritis bad enough to have both your knees replaced, I'm not sure about the status of your hips. So you may need more mobility and more strength around your hips to accommodate for lack of motion and stuff in your knees, and your hips may have some trouble with that. So getting some more strengthening around there. And I'd even look at your spine myself.
Right. And then that may help kind of offload your knees a little bit and may help with the stiffness. Yep. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
That's very interesting.
That's a lot of data, I know.
But it may be that you kind of need to change the focus of your rehab program a little bit. In those early phases of rehab, that's what you need to do. You need to strengthen the muscles around the knee. Maybe we need to step back and look a little bit broader picture and kind of switch exactly how you're doing your strengthening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
That's a good point. I do have bands to put around my knees and do the side-stepping things, but you know what? I totally forgot about those.
There you go. Uh-huh. A tune-up would be good.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Julie.
Thanks.
And bye-bye. And on to Max in Oshkosh. Hi, Max.
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Hey, I had an ACL, I don't know, I tore and it was replaced with somebody else's. It's kind of gross.
Did you get to pick them?
Cool.
An allograft? It was an allograft.
I got to pick the person out. No.
Nice.
anyway, what ended up happening was my therapy kind of fell short because of my insurance.
Of course.
And what I'd like to do is I like to help kids with cross-country skiing and downhill skiing just to show them, you know, little kids. And I would like to strengthen that muscle and the tendons back so that I can possibly do it this year yet. Mm-hmm. I had it done in May, the surgery, and it might be too soon, I know. But I'd like to work on getting that stronger. Is there any ideas, recommendations?
So when you're talking about teaching them how to downhill ski and cross-country ski?
Well, I do a little of both. Like on some days, I do some cross-country skiing. You know, I show kids at one place. And then other days, like on a Sunday, we go to an Nordic mountain, and I show them how to put boots on, and we go down bunny hills. So I'm going high speed.
Okay. So I'm going to ask one more weird question. Skate ski, is your cross-country skiing skate skiing or classic?
The cross-country ski is just classic.
Okay.
Basically with poles. I mean, with kids, we start them out without poles because we get them used to the skis, but
sure. Okay.
Yeah, so, you know, your biggest risk in any of that is falling.
Right.
You know, you have these big, long levers on your feet that can torque across your knee. So that's your biggest risk, and kids are unpredictable. So you know, those are the things that you'd have to watch out for and be cautious of. So in terms of strengthening, do you belong to a gym?
I don't, unfortunately, but I do. I love working out on my own, even though I'm a fat guy.
Okay. So you've got a great sense of humor.
I like working out and eating. Yeah. So.
Okay. So, well, did your physical therapist give you things like squats or lunges?
I never had the conversation about the skiing with her. And the surgery, I'm going to tell you, was amazing. Like 3 days after the surgery, I was walking. I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah. The allografts go pretty fast.
Oh my gosh. So, I mean, literally the exercises she was giving me, it was stuff I could do already, which was really weird. So I only went 3 times and that was it.
Okay. And you can't go back now?
The insurance probably won't let me. I could pay out of pocket.
Okay. No. So, you know, at this point we recommend things like squatting, lunging.
With weights.
With weights, yeah. You know, standing on a single leg and reaching to the side, reaching to the back, reaching across in front. You know, where you're weight bearing on that leg to help strengthen the quads and the glutes, especially for things like skiing, where you're weight bearing, you know, I would do little hopping drills and stepping up, kind of like stepping up and down on a step to strengthen it.
And even a wall sit with an isometric hold where you sit down and you kind of hold that position for 30 yep. or 60 seconds, which yep. kind of mimics what you're going to do if you go down yep. a little bunny hill would be a good yep. idea.
Yeah, so some two-footed hopping drills, like forward, back, side, and some single-leg hopping drills so that you get comfortable balancing and landing on a single leg should you be required to do it. Part of it is strengthening, and part of it is also the connections between your brain and your muscles are having an existing motor program for something. So, you know, the corollaries in older people, we have them practiced stepping, turning, closing their eyes so they're accustomed to moving in the dark. Well, the same is true for you. You want to have an existing motor program in your head if for some reason you get caught off balance by some little kid. So you want to practice balancing on that single leg, hopping, moving on a single leg in case you get caught in that situation so your muscles know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. I want to give Lynn in Dubuque, Iowa, a chance to join us, too. Hi, Lynn. Thank
Hi.
You for calling.
My call.
What can we do for you?
I have had repeated rib injuries over the years, and when I was in my 20s, I actually had costochondritis, which is an inflammation of the cartilage, and I don't know if that's what got my repeated rib injuries going in the first place or what, but it seemed like over the years I thought that they were primarily bruised ribs or maybe a couple of times a few cracked ribs, but it seems like that they don't do very much for that. So even if you go in, unless they're afraid that you have a cracked rib that's going to injure a lung or something, it's primarily rest and icing and whatever. But last year I got a mammogram done and they injured two of my ribs, and about 10 days ago, and it took about 2 months for them to heal. About 10 days ago, I was at the gym, and I was on the leg curl machine, and I felt my cell phone in my right pocket, so I rolled over onto my left side, and I think either subluxated those same two ribs or maybe dislocated them. I heard a loud popping noise.
Oh.
Had excruciating pain, of course, and have had kind of a bump and whatever since. So I had never injured them that way before, just like simply rolling over on them and had them do that. So I haven't gone to the doctor because I'm pretty sure I didn't break anything. I think I just, as I said, either subluxated them or dislocated them. The swelling has come down somewhat. I don't have any bruising. But I guess what I'm wondering is, I've read up on it some sense, and it sounds like it's not that uncommon for that to happen. And it sounds like they don't do very much still for it. But what I'm wondering is if I could do more to prevent that from happening, because it's pretty inconvenient.
Yeah, pause button. So I don't know where you read that, but both of us are shaking our heads. This is not a common injury.
I mean, you could have like one rib injury, but to have them be injured that often is a little unusual. Can I ask how old you are?
I'm going to be 63 in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
But I'm very fit and active.
Right.
And
have you had your bone density checked?
Yes, and I just crossed over the line into osteoporosis minimally, like, you know, just past 2.5, but they started me on Fosamax because my mother has a pretty serious
There you go.
Yeah, so that's part of it. Do you have problems with any other joints? You've ever dislocated joints, subluxed joints?
My shoulders.
Okay.
And my whole family kind of...
Okay. Yeah, you're hypermobile. So to me, you have a combination of two issues. You have the overarching issue would be a connective tissue dysfunction that is affecting both your bones, making you at higher risk for osteoporosis and affecting your ligamentous stability.
Mm-hmm.
So so you're more prone to dislocations. So
everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere.
At any joint.
Everywhere.
At
any joint. So if you haven't seen a physical therapist, this is an interesting perfect storm of two aspects of an overarching connective tissue problem. So
that's only going to get worse since you're postmenopausal.
Exactly. So I would see a physical therapist that has some expertise in connective tissue dysfunction and get some strategies to be at the gym safely.
Right. The fact that you're at the gym, that you're doing exercises and load bearing and doing all that is wonderful. It's a matter of you need to do it correctly, and you'll need to have a really customized program to not overstretch your connective tissue and put you in bad positions.
Yep, because you're going to be at risk for thoracic spine, probably kyphosis and osteoporotic fractures there if you're not doing your stuff correctly.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. And is that a fairly common? Would a lot of physical therapists have that training?
Mm.
I would probably see an orthopedic.
Definitely an orthopedic.
An orthopedic specialist. I try to find an OCS or an orthopedic clinical specialist in Dubuque, and I'm guessing there probably are a few.
Are some. Good luck.
Thank you so much for calling. In about 30 seconds, can surgery help arthritis?
It depends.
Usually surgery for arthritis is a joint replacement. There are some in-between surgeries, microfractures and things like that, that can provide some temporary relief, but definitely temporary. I would certainly go with physical therapy first.
Right.
Well, here we are at the end of the show. Lori and Jill, thank you so much. And we'll see you again on December 19th.
Yes.
Awesome. Hopefully, will it be snowing? We want white Christmas.
Right, exactly.
Why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Lori Tyne, Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests from the University of Wisconsin. Lori with the Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill, an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. They'll be back on December 19th. Tomorrow, Dr. Sandy Sawchuk comes by to talk about your pet's health. Thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.